We're back with this extended edition of Clear Path, your roadmap to health and wealth, brought to you by the Transamerica Institute. I'm Greg Tucker. We've been talking here about workplace wellness with our very special guest, Dr. Ron Getzel, and of course, Hector De La Torre, who leads the Transamerica Center for Health Studies. I want to come back to something that we touched on earlier, and that has to do with this really making a difference. So let's say you've got some group of employees who perhaps are disproportionately not fit or overweight. As an employer, you've instituted a wellness program. You want to get your employees fit and healthy and perhaps rejuvenated. And a couple years into it, there's not a noticeable change for whatever reason. Then what?
Well, I mean, first of all, you got to look at what you can do to change the environment to promote physical activity and healthy eating. Starting with the healthy eating, you know, what are your cafeterias offering? Are they off fatty foods or do they have salad bars? Do they even give you a financial incentive to use the healthy food? Is there labeling on the healthy food so you can go pick it up? Are there discounts for that? Do you have to wait longer to get the unhealthy food than to get the healthy food? How about vending machines? Do they offer healthy food options? Physical activity, you know, again, are you given breaks? Are there physical activity stations right outside of your workstation where you can go and get on a bicycle or get on a treadmill, standing desk? Can you walk around the facility? Are there marked walkways? So all of these things are environmental, and they're actually very, very cheap to implement.
And you touched on an important aspect here, that sitting is almost the new smoking. I mean, the study after study indicates that, and Hector's covered this in previous shows, that you should be every hour up and walking.
Every half hour, I would say.
Every half hour. Yep. Oh, my God.
Well, even if you get up for a few minutes, you walk around for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes every half hour, your blood is flowing, your head is all of a sudden getting new blood, it's oxygenated. Ideas come to your brain, and you can be much more energized and focused on your work.
It doesn't reduce your productivity to get up and move around. And we saw with some of the interviews, in the back of the study, we have a number of interviews with companies and what they're doing. Honest Tea, right here in Maryland, the CEO purposely sited their facility, their offices, next to a bike path so that their workers could bike to work or walk or jog during their breaks. Mm-hmm. So he purposely made that effort.
Not only that, he also gave them all bicycles. When they sold their billionth Honest Tea beverage, he gave them all bicycles, as a matter of fact. Right. So indeed, that's encouraging them. But, you know, walking meetings, even standing meetings, you know, if you want to have a short meeting, it doesn't have to be in a conference room. And why don't you stand? I guarantee you the meetings will be a lot shorter and more focused.
Let's come back to the issue of measurement, because in the end, this has got to add up to something, productivity and enhanced job performance. Give us a little overview on how you measured and what you've seen and would constitute a success story.
Sure. So the three categories of outcomes are usually health outcomes, cost outcomes, and productivity outcomes. And there are measures and instruments in each of those buckets. For health outcomes, things you just talked about, the proportion of the population that's overweight or obese, the proportion of the population physically active that's eating healthy food, that's less stressed, that has blood pressure and cholesterol and glucose levels in check, you can measure those quite readily. In fact, they're typically part of health assessments. On the financial stuff, you can look at healthcare cost increases, at absenteeism, at safety incidents, disability, and things like that. And then productivity, there are actually a number of instruments out there that measure people's performance, but even more importantly, asking people, does my employer care about my health and well-being, and does he or she provide me a culture of health? Really, really important to measure that over time.
Dr. Getzel and Hector, let's move to the how here. How do you really design and implement an effective and really comprehensive workplace wellness program? There are some do's and don'ts in your study.
Sure. You know, starting with the individual factors, the guide that is free online actually goes through different categories of risk, things we've already talked about, tobacco and obesity and blood pressure and stress and so forth, and then takes the evidence from scientific studies and mostly from the community guide, which is housed at the CDC, and tells you, you know, do this, do this, do this, do that. And each piece of advice, which is really written in very layperson language, is cited. So there's an evidence base behind it in each of those categories. On the organizational front, which is the surround for all of this, we talked about leadership commitment and support, creating a culture of health. Strategic communication, what that means is, you know, you can't just send an email out or have some website out there. You've got to surround people with these messages. We care about your health. We're providing you resources. They're free. Here's how you get them. We're supporting you to do it, you know, and constantly getting that information out in a different variety of different media. Smart incentives. We talked earlier about incentives. Listen, you can't really expect somebody to change a lifelong habit like smoking or overeating or being sedentary just by giving them a couple of $100. It's not going to work. What incentives can do is bring you to the party, have you pay attention, learn things, learn the skills, gain the knowledge, and then it's got to come from the inside. You have to incent yourself. You've got to motivate yourself. You've got to have a good reason to quit smoking or exercise or eat healthy. Otherwise, the incentives really are a waste of money. Other things that are important include engaging the employees in the design and implementation of the program. So these can't be parachuted in by a vendor. You can't just say, all right, we've hired so-and-so to come in here. They're going to fix your health in a month. You know, just let them do it. The employees themselves have to tell you what they want, how they want it, and they need to be involved in the overall design. And then finally, measurement and evaluation.
Back to the design.
Well, that's the beauty of the guide, I think, because in under 100 pages, it gives you very specific things you can do. The information is right there. Now, if you do want to dig deeper, there are resources, and we do provide those resources in the guide. But a lot of it is, you know, kind of off the shelf.
When we put this together, my thinking was, again, going back to the small business mentality, you have these small businesses that don't have fancy consultants. They're not going to find outside resources. They're not going to put the money into it. So the idea was, what would a consultant do? If you could hire a consultant who could give you evidence-based information and a guide to doing workplace wellness in your company, what would that look like? And then we did it. We partnered with the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, and here it is. And it's free on our website. So you're getting a workplace wellness consultancy for free.
And let me plug that. That's at transamericainstitute.org. You click on the health center, and there's the guide downloadable for free.
One other guide that's free of charge and available is at the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It's called the Worksite Health Scorecard. Worksite Health Scorecard. Right now, it's about 125 questions in about 16 different categories. But it's a yes-no kind of questionnaire. Are you doing this? Are you doing this? Are you doing this? Very, very simple guidance and advice. And if you'd want to learn more about how to do this, like have healthy food options or physical activity or tobacco cessation, click here, and it'll take you to a site that gives you all the information you want.
We touched on the trends, how the whole workplace environment has changed, and it's going to continue to change. More and more people are working from home, for instance. So the obvious question is, how does it pertain to them if they're employees of a company? They don't work all together. They don't come to the office, or they do so rarely. And yet the objective is still there. You want them to be to perform optimally, contributing and engaged. How does this pertain to them?
Yeah, certainly the individual risk factors apply regardless. So eating healthy, exercising, not using tobacco products, managing alcohol, you know, stress and so forth. Those doesn't matter where you are. You're at home, you're at work, you're out in the community. Those are habits that are good for you, and they're going to keep you healthy. The organizational factors are indeed a lot tougher because you want to have social connectedness with your fellow workers. And you've got to figure out ways to do that virtually. I mean, right now, I've got staff all over the country. And we get together all the time, and we talk, and we send emails, we have meetings, and so forth. Rarely are we there physically present for one another, but we really feel that we are physically there for one another because whenever anybody needs something, pick up the phone or send an email or get a meeting going. And you've got to create that kind of climate where people really do feel connected even if they're not physically together.
We highlighted some of the do's that you want to, the things you want to encourage. In the study, there's also the don'ts.
Yeah, I mean, these are don'ts, but they're really not don'ts. They're don'ts only if that's the only thing you do and you expect a program to emerge out of that. So, for example, just handing out a health assessment and paying people $50 to fill it out without any follow-up, that's not going to get you much. Fill out a 15-minute questionnaire. I'm overweight and I smoke and I'm stressed out. Tell me something I don't know already. You know, give me some follow-up to that. Sending people to a website. You know, our health plan has a wellness website, and, you know, the people who go there are the healthy people. because they want to reinforce their wellness. But the people who really need health promotion are not going to get very much from a website. Short-term campaigns, I'm not a big supporter or fan of Biggest Loser campaigns, because those may actually be harmful to get people lose weight very, very quickly. Are there campaigns that are really isolated from a comprehensive program? And, then hiring other people to fix all those unhealthy workers. You know, if you go out and get a vendor and you basically wash your hands of, this is my responsibility as an employer, I'm not involved, it's your job to fix these unhealthy people, not mine, that's not going to work either.
There are so many vendors out there. When we started to do this work before we launched the study, I was so amazed at how many vendors are, and I've gone and spoken at different conferences, how many of these folks there are out there. And some of them, frankly, are like snake oil salesmen. And so you really have to be careful about these vendors who are out there selling their services, promising you that they're going to give you a healthy workforce, because many times they're just making things up.
Dr. Goetzel, you referred to it earlier, and that is, it's about a culture. I was struck by what you said just a moment ago, that it's really for people who need it.
Yeah, and it's more than a program. It's a culture that's
culture,
evolved.
Right.
So, you know, if all of your fellow workers are doing it, I mean, I used to work at a company where my supervisor would say, he was a CEO at the time, says, all right, we're going to have a meeting. Let's run first, and then we'll talk afterwards. Or we'll go at lunch and walk around the grounds. So your fellow workers are all doing this. Middle of our management meeting, somebody would come in with a boombox and play disco music. So all of these senior managers would get up and start dancing for 10, 15 minutes, sit down, and go get back to business.
Again, I want to make note that this free study, this free guide, is available at transamericainstitute.org. Click the Center for Health Studies. And downloadable, and it's a wonderful guide. Dr. Goetzel and Hector, what are some of the success stories? I mean, who's been doing this right?
There are various places you can go and find really wonderful companies that are doing this. One place to go is at the www.thehealthproject.com, and that is insight into about 60 companies that have won the C. Everett Koop Award. This has been going on for 20 years now. And they've got great programs, but not only that, but they've got documentary evidence that their programs improve health and save money. So companies like recently USAA is there, Dell Computers there, Dow Chemical, Prudential, Johnson & Johnson, Procter & Gamble, a bunch of companies that have done studies of their workplace programs, and they continue to evolve and improve them. Another place you can go to is a website that we have at Johns Hopkins, Promoting Healthy Workplaces. And there, again, there are case studies, wonderful examples of companies large and small that have done this and have really created cultures of health. One wonderful example is a little company in New York called Next Jump. 200 people there, software engineers in New York City. They've got the most amazing culture of health environment there for their software engineers. And the CEO will tell you, what we did here is hire people who want to make their mothers and their fathers proud of them. What does he mean by that? Their fathers are proud because they're making good money and they're doing great work. Their mothers are proud of them because they're staying healthy. They're getting enough sleep, they're getting exercise, they're losing weight, and they have social connections with other people, and that's good. Health is really broader than physical health. It's emotional health, it's spiritual health, it's social health, but also financial health. You know, people, if you have to worry about paying the mortgage or paying the rent or, you know, buying groceries, that's going to influence your health. And a lot of companies are now providing that kind of support and counseling in financial wellness. A CEO that we saw at Graco, a company in Minnesota, went on the shop floor and he said, you know, in our company, we have employee stock ownership plan, meaning that if we do well, you do well, and money goes into your retirement, don't you want to have a very long retirement where you can spend that money? And we're trying to help you do that.
And that was absolutely one of the motivations for Transamerica Center for Health Studies and ClearPath, which is that we want to have people get healthier so that they can enjoy what life has to offer.
It's been a pleasure, Dr. Ron Goetzel, our specialist from Johns Hopkins University and the Bloomberg School of Public Health. Thank you for sharing your insights. Thank you for Johns Hopkins' participation in this very important and, I would say, groundbreaking study of the Transamerica Center for Health Studies. Hector, it's always good to be with you here on ClearPath. The study that was produced by Johns Hopkins, the Bloomberg School of Public Health, and the Transamerica Center for Health Studies is available at transamericainstitute.org. roadmap.org. It's downloadable, and there you can read all about it and hopefully put to practice many of the wonderful recommendations that are there. Thank you for joining us here on Clear Path, your roadmap to health and wealth, brought to you by the Transamerica Institute. Until next time, I'm Greg Tucker.